Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, June 2nd, 2021, or more like the late 70s, 1979 in particular. Gas prices up, lumber prices up, stagflation. Remember that? Even odd days at the pumps, right? Or when you could get the pumps. The Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced.
I had every girl crazy about a sharp-dressed man. Where's your coat?
My coat is hanging on the chair, and I want to show off my spenders. It's been a busy day.
You're looking good, ready for business.
Ready for business, Got some business to take care of. Speaking of business,
say hello to my little friend.
Say hello to my little friend. That's from Scarface, right? Yeah. Say hello to my little friend. Anyway, speaking of business, folks, Friday, we're not going to have a show on Friday. And this is what you support. This is what we do. Just to let you know, okay, I'll be working, with Russ Dizdar and his team. Just leave it alone or leave it at that. Got some things, got to take care of some business. So it's going to be a work weekend this weekend and Patreon this weekend. Am I right? Eric the Tech, I was wrong. I was wrong last week.
Yes, sir.
I was like, brr. And just so everyone knows this, let's start singing right now. Happy birthday to Eric. Not today, but tomorrow. He's going to be, I don't know, old enough to, he's going to be old. I'm not going to give his age, but, old enough to know better. With me right now is Randy Taylor. We've got a lot to talk about. You know,
Corn Pop.
He's a bad dude. What happened to the sound effects that we had? Where'd they go?
We had to use that board to record stuff.
All right. That's okay. Can we get another board? Or is that like expensive?
Yeah.
All right. Let's get another, unless it's expensive. But anyway.
No, it's not very expensive.
All right. All right, that's good. Because we need another one to. That's one more device for you to be pressing over there. I don't know. It looks like a spaceship over there. All right, folks. Couple of things real quick before. And Randy's on with me now, but I just want to touch on this. A couple of things. The truth about Bill Gates and about Microsoft and about Jeffrey Epstein has really not been told. And about Bill Gates and others. With Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and so on, not been told. The truth about the sexual exploitation of young children, including those coming over from the southern border, which has been going on forever, okay, nothing new, has really not been told. And speaking of that, I want to say thank you so much for making this a bestseller, In the Dark of Night on Amazon. Okay. In the Dark of Night. This is my newest release. And this goes back into, inspired by true events based on a ritual murder that took place back in 1987. Okay. It's really, I'll tell you what, it's gotten some very good reviews and I want to thank you for that. So if you've gotten this from Amazon or if you've gotten this from our store, please stop by Amazon and leave an honest review and, you know, just be honest about what you thought of the book. The third book will be coming out. Yes, it will be coming out as a re-release. Did you get that? Of the first book, Stained by Blood. So a lot of stuff going on right now. All right. But getting back to what I was saying. The southern border, I'm going to tell you right now, $2,200 per person, per coyote. Okay, that's what illegal aliens are paying. They're currently paying Mexican smuggling groups, some $2,200 per person to cross the Rio Grande into the United States. That's 2.2 million per 1,000 that cross. Now, do the math on that and understand how much money there is there. But it's, now I had a conversation with somebody about what's going on up here. And let me just say this. What's going on up here has little to do with the people and more to do with the government. Okay. Nothing to do with the people up here. The people, when I say people, I'm talking about the locations and such. Now, I will make an exception. The exception on that would be, in my opinion, the activist Benedictine nuns. Okay, the activist nuns. But that aside, okay, it is the government agents and agencies. All right. Full stop. All right. So you take that. And I also want to mention this. I'm throwing a bunch of stuff out here. And then Randy Taylor coming on. Roger Stone's wife, folks, you know, if you don't, I'm telling you now, you know, she was, she's fighting stage 3 cancer. And I will say this. It's my belief that her cancer was aggravated by the treatment by the DA, by the Attorney General, by the FBI, by the globalists against Roger Stone. What they did to Roger Stone was absolutely, in my view, unforgivable. Now, what they are planning on doing, and please hear me well, what they're planning on doing against President Donald Trump is to hit him on a couple of different fronts. Hit him on the district attorney level out of New York, Letitia James, for various state activities, alleged, okay, crimes, alleged. And then from there, they're also looking at the federal aspect against Donald Trump. But they want to take, they need to take President Trump down. All right. This in the wake of the emails from Fauci. Now, no doubt you heard, and this is where I'm going to bring Randy Taylor in. Now, no doubt you heard about the emails that were released from a FOIA. Okay. However, we're looking at a sum total of 3,234 pages of emails that were released and dumped. And I've got all 3,234 pages and I've been going through them. Okay. There it is right there. But that's not the entire dump. Okay. The entire dump was elsewhere, but there it is. As a matter of fact, I might copy and from the zip file and put them up on HagmanReport.com. But there, just to give you an idea, there is the, a taste of the emails. Now, why this is important, and Randy Taylor, you can come on in and then we'll talk about this because this is important to take a look at. Randy, how are you?
I'm doing very good today, sir. How are you? You look pretty spiffy, man.
I feel pretty spiffy.
You do. You look like you're at the head of the big boardroom, and
that's right.
All the shareholders are there, and right on.
No, actually, it's not a boardroom. I want to be like that Marlon Brando. What was that? The Godfather. I want to be. Except I'll be the dog father.
Speaking, you look great, buddy. You look great, man.
Thanks. And speaking of which, can I mention can I mention them?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, what a great looking dog, Randy Taylor's got. Okay. He sent me a picture, him and the dog next to one another. I said, you know, I want him. You not so much. I want him.
Okay. He's a big boy.
Yeah.
He's a sweetheart. He's a sweetheart.
Now he's basically a German Shepherd. Roughly.
He's what they call a King Shepherd.
Yeah.
So he's at 7 months and at 100 pounds.
Yes. Yes. And you know what? He's a great looking dog. So anyway, yeah. So I'm going to be the dog father. Anyway, So let's go back, if we don't mind. Let's go back to the Fauci email dump, at least to show the page, only because there's a couple of things here that you had mentioned right before the show. You know, when did Fauci have time to write a book?
Yeah.
Okay. And when you look at some of these emails, he's pushing a whole lot of stuff off onto other people, but that's kind of a different thing. I really think what the core importance of these emails are, there's a couple of takeaways, and I'm going to give them to you. And I want your comments on them, okay? Because I look at these emails, and I think of Mengele, Dr. Mengele. I won't even – no, just Mengele from Nazi Germany. These emails prove, number one, Fauci lied, is lying and continues to lie, but lies. It proves corruption. It proves planning. It proves a conspiracy of cover-up. Okay. Now, again, 3,234 pages of his emails have been released. In late February of 2020, Fauci received an email alerting him that COVID 1984 was released, not accidentally escaped, but was released from a lab in China. Fauci forwarded the email to a person at NIH, NIAID, and told them to handle it. And then if you find the release of emails, that's on page 522. Now, right there, why would Fauci do that? Because that's you don't say, hey, well, I mean, this is bio warfare, and it proves it's bio warfare, in at least in my view, in my assessment. And Fauci says, you go here, handle this. What do you think about that? I mean, what's your thought on that?
Well, Fauci all along has known what this is,
right?
And the man. I don't believe anything comes out of his mouth. I lost faith in Fauci, like within days of seeing the man on television. He's a myriad of lies and deception.
Okay.
And when you look at these emails and when he says handle it and all that, I understand delegating responsibilities. I get that. That's what a leader does. But his is more of a passing the buck. So as opposed to, you know, delegating responsibility. And the other thing that's really bothering me, though, is when does this man have time to write a book?
Well,
and we're supposed to be the deadliest plague pandemic in the world. I mean, this demands that everyone gets a shot. When do you have time to write a book?
Well,
I'm just not there.
Well,
And better yet, it's going to be the clowns that run out and buy the book.
Yeah, and it's a book about service, and yeah, it's just a bunch of, in my view.
I love Fauci.
What was that?
Oh yeah, by the way, happy birthday, Eric.
Not till tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Whatever.
Thank you.
I probably won't talk to you tomorrow, but happy birthday, man.
Yeah.
I'm working tomorrow.
Yeah.
He is working tomorrow. I'm making him work tomorrow.
Doug's making me work. I'm actually going to take off when Doug has to meet with Dizdar.
Yeah. So he's got a day off on Friday, which is good, which is why we're not going to have a show on Friday.
I'm going fishing.
Are you?
Yeah.
Will you wait? I got to tell you, though. All right. Yeah. I agree with you on the book, and you're right. When did he have time to write a book? But there are a few other issues here, I think, that are kind of even more dramatic. In mid-March of last year, Fauci received an email. This is page 2,286. I think my eyes are bleeding. Okay. Dr. Fauci, he received this email titled Coronavirus Bioweapon Production Method. Now, this email, and you can see it. I should have sent this to Eric the Tech, but again, I didn't, but I can put this up on the website. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send this to you, and I think this you'll be able to show the pages. The reason this is important is because we've been lied to. This is a bioweapon out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina to Canada, from Canada to Wuhan, and it's by Fauci, and it's by and again, this is based on my opinion, but investigative opinion by Fauci, by Barrick, and by Peter Daszak. So, okay, I'm going to send this to you, Eric the Tech, right now, and then you can follow along as we go to the different. And Randy Taylor, I sent you.
I like how you mentioned Canada in there because they're in this too.
Yes, yes,
they're in this too.
Yeah, you know, this is a globalist. None of this is about.
No, this is a globalist maneuver against the people. This is plain and simple. This is, was unleashed on the world's population on purpose.
Yes.
There's no bats. There's no bat soup. Okay. Batman didn't do this. This is, and a lot of the controversy and the scare and the conspiracy theories and all that were a response by China once this thing was released. And I think those were planned. And I don't know if you people remember, but folks, go back because it's been over a year. Go back and remember Chinese people locked in their apartment building. They were welding the doors shut. People were screaming. Little clips like that, like being filmed on Wuhan's iPhone, okay, and put on the internet and sent out. And I absolutely 100% believe that was sent out by the Chinese government. That wasn't Chinese citizens sending out little clips. Not only the best way to cover up this scandal called COVID-19 is to create controversy around it.
Yes.
Things that, yes. Because in confusion, it's a war tactic. You go in, boom, confusion, and the bad guys run. The bad guys get away. This is how it works. This thing was engineered top, bottom, sides. The reaction to it was all charted out ahead of time. Every bit of it. And we'll do it next week, okay? I've still been working on the product that I was talking about, punching holes in my own theory. And all I'm going to give you next week is a what if on one of the shows. I'm not sure which one. I have a crazy schedule next week, but I'm going to get in here on one of the shows with Doug, and I'm just going to give you a what if, okay?
Right.
And that's all I'm going to ask you. I'm not saying that it's the plan. I'm not saying that it's gospel. Right now, no one has proven anything to me anywhere.
You know, yes, and I've been attempting to, because I know your theory, which, folks, I don't agree with his theory, but that doesn't mean it's invalid. It just means
that it's not a theory that I'm saying is
right,
that I necessarily say this is what I'm going to run with. I'm just going to give you in the big portfolio one more thing to consider.
Again, that's it's a what if thing.
It's a what if, and please remember those two words: what if. Because we've been looking at a lot of what ifs.
And you know, Cliff High did just a tremendous video. Now, some people, you have to understand, there's some language, you know, you think I'm bad language with Cliff High, but he did the woo, WTF woo, okay, where he was vindicating woo, where he was talking about different periods of time. I'm not going to link to it, or I can't link to it right now, but maybe in the program description box. But anyway, he was talking about dangerous periods, and you know, as we had said that we're entering into a very seriously dangerous period between now and the end of August. I'm just going to leave it at that. And he gets into the reasons why, and his assessments were vindicated based on what we're seeing now. But anyway, back to Fauci. I just wanted to go here. On page 522, which I sent to Eric, of the emails, this is the email, page 522. In February of 2020, if you look at this email, Fauci received this, alerting him that COVID was released. It didn't accidentally escape from a lab in China. and Fauci forwarded the email to a person at NIH and told them to handle it, basically. All right, so that's that one. Do I have that right? Do I have that marked correctly or no? It's all redacted and stuff. But then, you know, Randy Taylor, 2 months later, Fauci received an email from researcher Peter Daszak, tied to the Wuhan lab, thanking Fauci for publicly rejecting the lab leak theory. That is on page 1150. Okay, so explain to me why? Well, you don't have to explain to me why. I think people have to understand the extent of the lie. Randy Taylor, I mean, we have been lied to about, number one, about the masks. We have been lied to about the origins of this Communist Chinese Party virus, the fact that it was created, that the gain-of-function studies were done here in the United States at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Then it went to Canada, and from there, because obviously the gain-of-function studies were absolutely too much to handle, or too much. It was too dangerous to be done. And Fauci and NIH they were told, no, you've got to stop this. Well, they didn't stop it. They just moved it offshore. And these documents prove that. And we should be pretty damn pissed off at Fauci and others who are involved in this. And I'm going to tell you something. We need to bring these people to account. And if the court system is not going to do it, the people are going to have to do it. What do you think about that?
Well, the question is why? You know, I mean, I'm curious what the motive is behind this. Is it the money?
No, it's control.
Is this morbid curiosity? No. Is this scientific? You know, Fauci's a strange guy. I don't personally know what motivates Fauci.
Okay, here's, I haven't. But wait a second. Okay, so hold on a second. You asked a question. Why? We have to, because we're not thinking big enough. People aren't thinking big enough. Here's my answer to you. Depopulation of the planet.
Right.
That is not some pie in the sky conspiracy theory. These Luciferians, and that's my word for them. I don't know what else to call them. They want to depopulate the planet to a sustainable level and get rid of us deplorables and undesirables. That's number one. Number two. Okay. They want our stuff. They want us dead. Number three, it's all about control. It was never about a virus. Well, the virus was the mechanism, but it was never about the virus. And it was really not about, it was never about the virus. It was always about, in my view, the jab. Speaking of which, and I'm just going to say this and I'm going to shut up. The Gates Foundation. Okay. Yeah, I say that all the time, right? So when you look at these emails and you start kind of patching things together. Zuckerberg, Fauci, they were in communication. They were talking about the this vaccine, or the jab, I should say, back in February of 2020, long before this ever came out, prior to the March 2020 lockdowns. When you think about this, they were already working on trials at that time. Now, we also know that the gain of function, or the mRNA jabs, the therapy, they stopped testing on animals because all the animals died. And I'll tell you this, in my view, and then I'm going to shut up about this. In my view, those people who received the jab are going to be really sorry. Now, are they all going to die? Probably not. Are they all going to get sick? I suspect, because that spike protein is, in my view, is the virus. When you kind of take the lens back and look at it, but people have to think bigger about this. But this is in my view, this is the biggest crime against humanity this planet has ever seen, and people better start realizing it. It's not about a stupid mask. You know, if you're so, folks, I'm sorry about this, but I got to tell you this. I had to go to the post office yesterday. Okay.
To see your picture on the wall.
It might be there today. So I look, you know, I don't wear masks. Okay. I went in there. I took care of my business at the counter, okay, without a mask. Now, everyone's wearing a mask. Apparently, they tell me it's a federal law or something. You got to wear a mask or a federal mandate. So I'm in there. I'm taking care of business. Now, look at me. Do I look like – anyway, the woman behind the counter did not say a word to me, okay, because I said, look, I need to take care of this. And then she said, okay, thank you. Okay, we'll do it. And we took care of it. There's like six people behind me, and there were six people in front of me, people milling about, everyone wearing a mask. Not a problem. So I'm walking out the door. Okay. Now there's two, there's a door one and then door two. I'm walking out the door, the second door. It wasn't the first door, it was the second door.
And this pick door number three.
You know, I got, now this lady, you know, she looked like, one of those, balls, that beach balls, you know, the balls you sit on. And anyway, she said to me, you gotta wear a mask. It's a federal law. I looked at her. I'm walking out. Okay.
Then she handed you Fauci's book.
Yes.
You found autograph, no less. You know, Randy Taylor, I was at a loss for words, okay?
Are you at a loss for words? Surely, you know what surely came, you just.
You know what came out of my mouth?
I hate to ask.
I'm going to tell you anyway.
Some profound words of wisdom, no doubt.
A giant cough and sneeze.
That's just shit, done that. I looked at her. Okay, now she's got, she's got like three masks on, and there are, anyway. I just looked at her, and the other thing that came to my mind, and I'm sorry for even thinking, I just looked at her and said, bite me. Ma'am, bite me.
Ooh, right on.
You know, first of all, I'm out of the post office, and I don't know. What's wrong with these people? I mean, I'm tired of these people. But anyway, so the bigger picture here.
Master. You got to come back with a snappy comeback, though, like, you know, yes, ma'am, and I'll agree in your case. Some people look better with a mask.
I like Austin's. I like, sorry, I'm trying to quit.
Sorry, I'm trying to quit. But you get, so this is a, Randy Taylor, I think that this is the biggest, in my view, this is the biggest crime against humanity we've ever seen. The masks are a symbol of control and compliance. The jabs are a symbol of control and compliance. Remember the swine flu deal back in '79? How'd that work out for people? Remember, folks, Fauci is, in my view, is a war criminal. AZT, AIDS. All right. So, but this is all about depopulation, and I think that this is all about the globalist takeover of the entire planet. That's
and if I may interject,
and you know what, take it from here. I'm done.
Okay, I'm just going to throw this out there, and this is, I think you're absolutely 100% correct that it is about control. The masks were about control. The jab is about control. As far as the shot itself, people are dying from it, as with many things. I mean, there's some people get the flu shot and die from it. The thing that I don't think this initial shot is the death shot. Now, I'll tell you why. And I just, some people are going to agree, some won't. The reason I say it's not the initial death shot, first of all, they can't get everybody to comply. All right, so that right there is a failure on their part. They'd never be able to pull it off. The other reason I say this is all these different vaccines or jabs that they have, because really it's a piss poor example of a vaccine. There's no uniformity across the manufacturers that I can see. I'm looking at these different ones, and it's like if there's five manufacturers, there's five different shots there. So I'll go back to what you're saying about control. I 100% believe that's what it's about. I think what they want to do is get people used to putting their arm out. Put your arm out every year. and then possibly one day you'll get the desk shot. But I think right now it's more of a focus on getting people under control, getting people ready to put their arm out, honestly. Because the way it's set up right now is the only people that are complying are, and for lack of a better explanation of this, this shot, this vaccine is almost a partisan issue. The conservatives say no to it. The Democrats and the left say yes to it, which is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life. A medical issue being partisan.
That's a good point.
I mean, think about it. These are the things that trouble me when, as an analyst, I sit down and I look at things and I go, wow, some of this makes sense. Some of it doesn't make any sense. And then we look at, we know, I guess what you have to keep in mind back here is, okay, what are the globalist plans for the world? We pretty well know what those are. Okay. Every detail. No, we don't know how it's going to be executed. No, we don't know. But, and it's almost difficult to put this in words. This particular shot isn't the shot designed to depopulate the world, in my opinion. Certain manufacturers and some of the things they're putting in these shots are very, very quite. Doug brought up a couple of them. There's some things in there that, in my opinion, shouldn't be in a vaccine, or what you're claiming to be a vaccine. One of the reasons I quit taking flu shots, regular influenza shots, was the ingredients. I started looking at the labels. And once again, different manufacturers, different shots. There's no 100% uniformity even on an influenza shot. And that's the part that's bugging me. If I'm going to go in and I'm going to wipe out the population, I'm going to need some sort of uniformity. And the other thing, how do I sell this as a globalist to Big Pharma that says, hey, you're going to participate in this? These are the shots we want. We're going to administer them to humanity, and we're going to kill humans. I still am a little fuzzy on that part. I think that some people in the pharmaceutical industry knew that something nefarious was coming. I remember up in Toronto. In fact, I was up there when that happened. A guy that owned a pharmaceutical company up there, him and his wife were brutally murdered. Brutally murdered. Now, he was a guy that was different than most pharmaceutical company owners. He was always looking for ways to make things cheaper. Get more drugs into the hands of people that couldn't afford them, that type of guy, you know, more of a philanthropist type of pharmaceutical owner. And him and his wife were brutally murdered. Bizarre. If you ever look into the case, it's so bizarre. And this happened, if I remember right, maybe 2018, so around there. And then I sit here and I look at it and I go, wow, I wonder what he knew. There was also a guy that worked for Department of Homeland Security that was very, very, very knowledgeable about the influenza, or not the influenza, about these type of things. And he was killed. So I'm wondering, and I also know, I know people that work in the government, Canadian and American, and they knew about this COVID long before we did.
Well, right. I mean, working backwards, you had event 201 in October of 19. That, again, working backwards.
Yes. So I mean, this has been in the works for a long time.
Right.
But I don't think this particular shot is the dust shot. Honestly, I think the dust shot's down the road once they've got people trained without fail in their minds to stick their arm out.
So you're looking at maybe, kind of like a binary or a trinary type of reaction. In other words,
they could be putting things in your body right now that you have 2/3 of the equation that'll kill you, and you're waiting for the other third.
Okay, and that's a good point. That's a good point.
And the reason I say that, with everything going on around because this is so bizarre how all this came out while Trump was in office. This particular thing, this COVID-19, actually, I hold responsible as a, one of the primary reasons the election was a fraud.
I agreed.
Absolutely, without fail.
Yep.
I think this was sitting on a back burner for some time. I think they've been planning this for well over a decade.
Agreed on that.
Okay, well over a decade. And don't think for one second that this was from bat soup or you know, the Wuhan chicken restaurant down there or anything. No, this is from the lab. Yes. This is a biological weapon.
Yes.
This, one thing that we might want to consider is it's also possible, because Fauci isn't the brightest son of a gun in the world. He is not the brightest bulb in the hallway, okay? It's possible that he went into this and his partners over in China turned on him. And he doesn't, and he doesn't know. And think about it. He's sitting here. Here's Fauci, the dumbass. You know, here's a bunch of money. I'm a scientist. You know, let's learn some stuff. And then next thing you know, they're like, okay, we got this dummy bringing us money. We're going to develop this. And, you know, we don't know. We don't know, because remember when all this stuff happened, Trump and China were at odds.
Very much over tariffs.
Everything. Exactly. Yep. The military thing's been brewing for years, yep. But the tariffs, boy, that just knocked that. That was a kick right in China's crotch. That was brutal, because well, look what it did to their economy. So,
and if I can slip one more thing in there,
please.
Okay,
please.
So Taiwan it as well, and folks, 1958. The United States almost launched nuclear weapons against China over Taiwan. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to dig for that information. But that said, right now, the Epoch Times was a huge piece about Taiwan furnishing us, the America, certain electronic chips that were essential, that are essential for our everyday use and the infrastructure. Now, having said that, all right, so what the tensions between China and Taiwan, what better way to deflect and to even be the aggressor against the United States to kind of neuter us so we don't interfere with the Taiwanese, so when they do launch or when they do go against Taiwan, we're kind of stuck. So you mentioned that, and I just want to add to that. So keep going.
And the thing is, once again, we're back to where we've said for months. Everything's interwoven here.
Yes.
My question is, now this is my question to that little worm Fauci. Why were you dealing with a Chinese laboratory to begin with? What possibly could you have in a Chinese laboratory that we don't have in an American laboratory, unless it's something nefarious and against the law? If this was a legit work, this was legit research, why wasn't it done here?
It was being done here until 2014.
But why would you? Until when?
2014.
Why did they move overseas? Now there's my question.
Okay, the reason is the people of sensibility, the scientists said, look, gain of function studies, that is weaponization. That's too dangerous to be done at all, period, end of story. We have to stop it. The money going to the gain of function studies was so good. Fauci and company, again, this is in my opinion and assessment, said, hey, I don't want to lose that money. So they moved it. And that's why they moved it from Chapel Hill to Canada and then from Canada to China, because why not? But the $3 million, I think it was $3 million worth of funding, $600,000 of which I think went directly to North Carolina, was cut off, but it was rerouted by the NIH to the gain of function.
That's why it's more of a rhetorical question. The point is, as soon as they moved it to China, it became a criminal act.
Yes, yes.
But with really, as far as I'm concerned, without fail, the Chinese, as in, they're not an ally of the U.S. They are a competing superpower. Why would you put the health of Americans on their plate? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. There's nothing possibly good could have come out of that Wuhan lab. So the fact that they even moved it overseas, the fact that they sent them $20 makes it criminal, as far as I'm concerned. And Fauci, honestly, should be charged.
I agree.
He absolutely should face criminal charges. I'm sick and tired of people emulating this man like he's something special. If he's writing a book, it should be from a jail cell.
I agree.
This man has done no good for mankind. He has done no good since this virus hit us. None. He's done nothing but lie and manipulate presidents, lie and manipulate. And the World Health Organization is just as guilty. These people are criminal. And if nothing else, criminal negligence, if nothing else, if you can't prove the criminal intent, I should be able to prove criminal negligence.
I think it's more criminal negligence, I think, is too easy. I believe.
Well, I mean, if we were giving them a way out, even.
Right.
The least is criminal negligence.
Yeah, I suppose if he was going to roll on people, yeah. If he was going to give up some other people, but involved in this core. Okay, mm-hmm. You've got Gates, Bill Gates, right? Bill and Melinda Gates, the Gates Foundation. You've got Mark Zuckerberg, who was communicating during this time. Again, 3,234 pages of emails. I got to tell you, man, again.
What possible reason does Mark Zuckerberg have to have a foot in this?
Okay, they were talking.
You know what I mean? He shouldn't even have a horse in this race.
No, but Zuckerberg, don't forget, was also the guy, along with his wife, who happens to be Chinese.
Yes.
Okay, who funded the drop boxes in Georgia and Pennsylvania and other locations and the absentee ballots and the other ballots. I mean, he a lot of money from Zuckerberg.
Which goes back, like I was saying, this is all along political lines.
Yes.
This is crazy. Yes. It's the craziest. This is like the craziest thing I've ever heard of.
Yes, yes. And I'm so glad that we're having this discussion. And folks, this is not rehashing old stuff. This is actually building on information we already knew, but now it's coming out. And
you got to put the pieces together. And sometimes there's been some time lapse and you saw something 3 months ago. Didn't make sense. Great. We put it on the shelf. You see something today and you go, okay.
Yeah.
Now we know what that meant.
So,
and we're seeing a lot of that because these guys are so bold in their criminal acts. They actually shoot themselves in the foot from time to time, publicly.
Yes.
That's what's amazing about this. That's how bold they're. That's how big the testes are on these guys. It's just amazing. I'm like, I can't believe it. And we're just sitting here as U.S. sits around in the media. And it's like, you know, like it's commonplace. Like this is, oh yeah, anyone should be able to play with humanity like that. You know, I don't. We're in trouble, folks. We're in deep trouble. And when you've got narcissists like Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, Fauci, these clowns that have billions of dollars and think that suddenly they're God. They've nominated themselves. They have a God complex. I always call it a God complex, where they think they're superior to other human beings and that they're going to call the shots for us. Zuckerberg isn't qualified, as far as I'm concerned, to do my laundry.
Exactly.
Who died and left this clown in charge? If I met him in person, okay, verbally, I'd rip him in half. Okay? And I mean, come on, I look at the guy. He looks like something out of a Petri dish. He doesn't even look like a human being. Looks like something that was flown in and found at Area 51. Somebody put some pants on and sent him to school. I mean, I just don't get these people. And who, I like that, who died and left Bill Gates in charge? I think his wife got so sick and tired of him, that's why she left him.
Honestly. Well, and I think, yeah. You know, I think you and I could probably do an entire show on Bill Gates and Melinda Gates and the Gates Foundation. Because I really believe when you look at the ties to Epstein and that whole clique of people, there's something really wrong there with the with the foundation. In my view, again, with in my opinion, with the foundation, with the marriage, and with the activities. And you're right. You know, just because you had look, if I had a billion or trillion or however, I don't, how much does the guy have? I don't know, a whole bunch of money. I don't know if I'd want to rule the planet. You know, like, no. Like this guy.
If I had billions of dollars, I'd be making Bill Gates' life miserable.
There you go.
Yeah. I would. Every time he got up, you go, oh man, is that Taylor guy again? Yeah. I would be camped so far up his butt, I'd be looking at his tonsils.
Well, and I think, you know, look, I think that this is what we need to do. Not just Bill Gates, but I think we have to take a look at the entire arena because moving on to one other thing that happened.
Well, the Illuminati that they speak of, the type of people you would find at the Bilderberg groups.
Right.
These are the types that think that they're going to run humanity.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, God made us free, man.
You know,
that's it. I didn't subscribe to you, to these types. I absolutely did. Bill Gates puts his pants on like I do. I assume he might put his underwear on backwards. I'm not really sure, but I'm every bit of qualified to run my life as anyone. I don't need him doing it.
Well,
I don't even know where he gets off thinking that he's not doing any good. He's exposed himself. He has absolutely exposed himself. And all this stuff he's been doing in Africa.
Oh,
there's
yes.
piles. There's piles of dead bodies over there.
Yes.
And here's the thing. Nobody's reporting on that. Nobody's talking about that. If we went over there, Doug, you and I, and tried to expose this, they would try and kill us.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's why I want to just tell people, if you haven't caught this, if you haven't watched any of my friend Colonel Lawrence Sullen, he's been a regular on the War Room with Bannon. You've got to catch Dr. Lawrence Sullen, Dr. Lawrence Sullen. He is.
How do you spell his last name real quick?
So
our readers or our listeners know.
I sound like Joe Biden when I'm talking right now. Sellin, Lawrence Sellin, Sellin.
Right on.
Okay, so I consider him a friend. This guy knows what he's talking about, and he, going back to what you said earlier, he was asked a question by Bannon earlier today. Okay, now, some of the stuff that Bannon says, I don't agree with. Other stuff I do. But Sellin, I'm going to tell you right, he's a straight-up good guy. And he knows what he's talking about. But he was asked, communist infiltration of our system, specifically our medical system, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, Colonel Sellin, based on your research, you know, what do you think it is? He said, by far, absolutely a 10. And he said what you said earlier. They've had 3 decades to infiltrate every aspect of our country, this Communist Chinese Party.
Yeah. Go back to Bill Clinton.
Yes.
Okay. Things started changing then.
Yes.
Really, really. Things started changing then. We've had a lot of people trying to infiltrate the country. I mean, we got the Muslim onslaught after 2001. You know, a lot of things going on. But the Chinese have been at it a lot longer than anybody.
Yes.
Okay, they've been eyeballing this. We are one big fat prize sitting over here. And we've talked about it before, and people need to understand it. China doesn't want an all-out war, like trying to invade America, because it would be useless. Okay? We're armed. They know it. They wouldn't even try it. You could attack us, but good luck occupying us. Not going to happen. But a biological agent is a surefire way to empty the United States of its occupants so China can move right in. Why would you destroy the country you're going to eventually live in. You know what I mean? They'd rather kill us, pick the bodies up off the street, burn them, and move in. They know our infrastructure. I mean, come on, they can take down. And don't think for one second they can't. We have been so sorry at protecting this country that they could shut down cities right now of electricity and anything that's online. They could right now leave air traffic control blank.
Oh my gosh.
I want you to stop it and stop and think about this. Yeah. Forget my power went out. How about how many flights in the air at any given time that suddenly have no direction? Can you imagine the mass casualties? Mm-hmm. We, in some cases, are 100% at their mercy. And the only thing you have to sit around and think is, what are they waiting for? What's next?
And that's a good point.
We have done such a sorry job. And the next, I swear, when they talk about Russia's the enemy, that is such a big distraction from the truth.
How about misattribution?
Oh, man.
The slaughterhouse hack, or the cattle hack that happened, 36 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, to me, okay, so the Russians were blamed. I believe that's misattribution. I don't. Mm-hmm. I believe that the Chinese are behind that. I don't have anything to prove it, but the blame on Russia.
And even with the Russian interference in the elections and all, it was the Chinese. I'm telling you,
yeah.
People, this it created the Russian boogeyman because we were at the Cold War with Russia for so many years, and these politicians really don't want to explain to the American people why they are currently in bed with a sworn enemy, China.
Yeah.
China is our enemy. China will never be our friends. Get it, people. Drill it through your head, okay? They're our enemy. They're our sworn enemy. I'll tell you what, I would much rather hang out with the Russians than China. I think one day, and I've always said since I was a little boy, I've always said one day it would be the U.S. and Russia fighting China. I just feel that one day that conflict could occur and we would sign up. There's more Christians in Russia than there are in China, I can tell you that.
For a number of reasons, but you know, one includes, the death, killing.
Yeah. Our government right now is absolutely asinine. In what they project and what they claim to the American people. What a failure. Biden is in bed with our enemies, period.
Correct.
You saw what he's doing. You saw what he's doing with Iran.
Yes.
Who's our goal? You saw that, right?
Yes.
Biden imported oil from Iran in March. First time since 1991,
yep.
Ignoring U.S. law to please a terrorist country.
How much sense does that make?
It makes perfect Biden sense.
Well, yes, but in terms of American exceptionalism, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever when you start importing energy from a hostile country.
Energy we don't need. It isn't like we need it. That's the thing.
They did
it as a favor to a terrorist regime. This is why the establishment and the media hated Trump. That's exactly why Donald Trump knows who our enemies are. He knew who our enemies are, and they spent 4 years trying to knock him out of pocket. Every time the man popped up, they hit him again. I've never seen so much stuff thrown at a U.S. president. And all of it was simply because he called things the way they were. And he knows China's the enemy. And he called China out. He slapped the terrorists on them. He made their lives miserable. He tried to tell everybody that Russia's not the enemy. And all of these things, everything they're doing today with the administration under Biden proves Trump to be true. It only proves that Trump was correct. So I love it when Biden does this stuff, except that it's putting us at risk. But every time that son of a gun signs something,
yep,
he proves Trump right.
No, very true.
And every time. Every time that mouth opens, he proves Donald Trump right.
Yes.
I don't even understand why he listens to this jackass of a president. And to call that hooker in heels the vice president, I don't get it. We've slid into the toilet with these people. And they didn't elect him on their merit. They elected him because they hated Trump.
Exactly. Well, those people who did vote for him.
Yeah, well, that's still in question, too. I mean, we're in such a mess, people. You've got to get fired up. We've got to get fired up. We don't, you know, we watch what we say on this program. We really do. And I'll tell you why. Because, but lawyers, lawsuits, and and they're making our lives miserable. They are. I had trouble just getting on here with Doug today. You know, I'm not kidding. It's no joke. It's sad. It's sad. And you go to the store and you're not alone. You know what I mean? It's just stupid. But you're not going to shut me down. You're not going to make me say anything different.
You know, and that's why I love you.
Kiss my butt.
Exactly. And you know something? We need the very people like you, we need to go out there and to say, you know what? Not anymore.
Say what's on your mind. Stand up. Say something. If somebody says something to you about a mask in the store, just rip their head off.
And
don't take it. Don't go, oh, I'm sorry, I finished. How about you just shut up?
Exactly. You know, because you know why? I mean, because shut up, okay?
That and if you see somebody being messed with,
get in it.
Because that son of a gun sitting there, and there's a patriot standing there taking crap off somebody over masks. Because I'll tell you right now, you want to wear a mask, you wear a mask. Cool. I'm good with that. You don't want to wear a mask, then please don't wear one. But don't let someone else tell you what to do.
That's it.
And it's just like with the shot. And I'm going to be honest with you. If you want to get the shot, get the shot. Okay?
Go ahead.
If you don't want the shot, don't get it. But don't let me pressure you into doing something. Don't let the government pressure you into doing something. Please, people, think for yourselves.
Got about 45 seconds. You could have put a period right there, or exclamation point right there. But
that's cool. Listen, next week, Doug, and I got a weird schedule. I'll discuss it with you later. But next week, I want to pop on and I want to do my what if. I gave you a little bit piece of it today. You didn't realize it. Doug caught it. We snuck a little bit in. I've been getting some really cool emails. We got some great, intelligent people out there in our audience. We love you. God bless you. Thank you for your support. And please continue to support us and our work here. It's very important. We got a lot of things going on, people. We need your help.
And I want to grab you hopefully sometime and just you and me extra, kind of like an overdrive program. I really do.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
God bless you.
Fireside chat.
Yes. Thank you. And I apologize for dominating the first part. I apologize for that. So, talk to you soon. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report. That was our number one. Randy Taylor, really some good stuff. We're going to be right back. Stay right where you're at. Hagman Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network. And welcome back to the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Hour number two of the Hagman Report. And I apologize. Hour number one, you know, we had so many problems. I'll just tell you this. We had so many, many, many problems, connectivity problems and such. So thanks for bearing with it seemed like just a, you know, it was kind of like everywhere, right? Just everywhere. So thank you for bearing with me. Again, I'm just going to mention In the Dark of Night. I want to thank everyone who's purchased that, made that an Amazon bestseller, at least for like 6 hours, which is pretty cool. Appreciate that. Appreciate your honest reviews at Amazon.com. Also at HagmanStore.com for your signed copy. We have, again, we have the rest of the palette of books in, and we're pretty well stocked up. So if you want to order directly from us, and if you want me to sign it, inscribe it, whatever, let me know. Just go to HagmanStore.com. Now with me is, and I don't want to take a minute of his time away, Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. That's ProvisInstitute.com. Link will be in the program description box. Of course, author of Saving the Constitution and Bathroom Economics. I'll tell you what, I had the best time with him last week. Or the last show that we did about economics. I really did. Spirited discussion. It was a spirited discussion. With that, Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com, who's got, by the way, Saving the Constitution, his weekly show. I understand he worked like doubly hard yesterday to get that show up. Eric the tech's over there moving boxes and plugging things in, and all right, so he's going like this. What does this mean? It means stretch it out, stretch it out. So let me know. Just give me a yell when it's ready. What's that? Okay, he's ready. There it is. And by the way, folks, again, he worked twice as hard yesterday to make sure that everyone was able to view his latest podcast, Saving the Constitution with Richard Proctor. It's on Rumble. There it is. Become a subscriber. I would urge you to do that. Richard Proctor, how are you, sir?
Today I'm good, and I wanted to talk about last week's show a little bit myself. How's about that?
Works for me. I tell you what, I had a great time with that. I really did.
A whole bunch of our listeners got really angry. I don't mean a little angry. They got really angry. I got called names.
You did.
Okay. Yeah, because I disagreed with you about the little girl and her husband, the little lady and her daughter who are destitute. And I kept saying, yes, it's right for this guy to raise the prices. Oh, they're mad at me. I can't believe it. But I need to point something out that's quite important in this business of economics.
Okay.
It is not a moral subject.
I learned that last week. I mean, true economics has nothing. Well, yes, I'm not gonna open my mouth, but you're right.
Yeah, it's like the law of gravity. Okay, I'm having trouble getting in the screen properly, so you guys just put up with it. Okay, I will find a way. If I had Eric here at my house, I could get it done easy. There, maybe you are.
Actually, he moves my chair when I'm not looking. Okay, so
all right. Anyway. I can't get this thing focused right. I'm trying to relax and talk at the same time. Maybe we're better now.
There you go.
Anyway, it's like the law of gravity, guys. You can't do anything about the law of gravity. I mean, if you chuck yourself off the top of a roof, oh, there's this story about this guy chucking himself off the top of a 10-story building, and they hurt him as he passed. Well, fifth story, okay. Fourth story, things are okay. Splat. You cannot change the laws of economics. You cannot change the law of gravity. I don't care how many people don't like it. I don't care how many moral issues come up. I don't care how many people think, oh, the poor people, why do they? And he says it's all right. Come on, guys. Law of economics is an absolute law. The only thing it cares about is what people want and what people will supply, and the price to make an exchange. That's all it cares about. Nothing else. Doesn't care right or wrong. I mean, drugs. Drugs are bad. They're terrible. But the law of economics says if there aren't very many of them, the price is going to go up. And the demands, the law of the demand side of it says, I got a demand for these things, and I'm not going to not have it. You will give it to me, period. You see the strong demand? Well, the supply guys will fill it. They'll find a way. It's the law. It will be that way. I don't care. Anybody argues with me, they can argue all day long. They can argue all night. I don't care. It cannot be changed.
Right. And I learned that. I went back and watched It's different when you're sitting behind the microphone talking than if you are just watching. And so I watched that episode, that the time we had together. And I learned a lot from that. And then I went to Bathroom Economics, and I read through a couple of segments from Bathroom Economics. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you know, it may not sound right, but Richard Proctor was correct. Now, it may not feel right, but it's what you say, the law of economics, that law can't be changed like the law of gravity. I understand that now.
And Nixon tried to change it in the early 1970s.
Right.
He said, prices are rising. Obviously, inflation. Obviously, that's prices. We must control prices.
And
that wasn't the answer, but that's what he said.
And that's a great example for what we're talking about right now with the Nixon, price and, or the wage and price freeze.
Yes.
Yeah.
90-day wage and price freeze happened in the 70s.
Right.
I've lived through a lot of stuff, Doug. So have you. But I watched it from a different viewpoint. I watched it from the economic side.
Right.
But anyway, this is what happened. He said, prices are going up. We've got to stop that. So how we'll stop it is we'll freeze prices and we'll freeze wages. Stop this problem. We're going to freeze those things for 90 days. So all we had was a lot of dickering back and forth on what was going to get an exemption and what wasn't and who can do this and who can do that and all kinds of stuff. But the prices stayed relatively the same and the demand, the wages stayed relatively the same for 90 days. Now, I'm going to just give you some hypothetical numbers. If nobody had touched it, let's start prices and wages at the number one. Just for an example, start at number one. And if nobody had touched it, let's assume, okay, I'm going to do it this way. I put my fingers up here. Let's assume, oh, this is hard to do. Let's assume that the wages and prices would have gone like that if it had not had a freeze. So it got from, in that illustration, it got from about number one to number eight. Okay. It went up. It would have gone up to number eight if there had been no freeze. But since there was a freeze, number one stayed number one, or maybe went to number two. Whoops. Fingers again up here so you can see it. I don't know how to do this. Maybe that'll work better. Oh my, is it all screwed up? Okay. Here, let's go. Number one like this, maybe number two a little bit like that, maybe. But on the 90th day, what happened? It didn't go to eight like it did the first time. It would go to 10 or 12 because of the force. It's like an explosion. Things just rocket. As soon as the lid is off, it dives out the top. I mean, it goes like fury. And that's what happened. The law of supply and demand was mad. He got angry. You can't mess with me. So instead of only getting eight, he got like 12. And nothing ever returned, so it didn't go back down either. Folks, you can't mess with the law of supply and demand. You can't mess with it. You may not like it, but you best know what it is so you'll understand what's happening. And you can't change it. It's done. Jump off a building. You try to stop. Can't do it.
Stated differently, I think you can do what Nixon did and suffer the consequences or create the effect, negative effect that happened. I think is what you're saying. Stated differently.
Yeah. Okay. But let me explain what Nixon really could have done to do the same thing exactly. And it would be a fix. Stop creating money. That's what caused the prices to go up. Stop creating money. Just stop doing it, which means stop spending money you don't have in the government.
Which is exactly what we're doing today. We're creating a boat ton of money. I mean, an incredible amount of money. And I think, and it's up to, I mean, tell me, but I think this is going to have to crash. It's going to have to.
Oh, it has to. I don't know the day. It's
right.
Going to crash. We are going to rue the day that this year 2020 happened with all these bailouts. right. and their first part of 21 happened with all these bailouts. It is going to come back catastrophically upon our bods. Ours, yours and mine, everybody in this country. I don't care if you're going to save your money in a paper bag, bury it in the lots outside. It doesn't matter. It's going to come down crashing and falling on our heads. And again, we can go back to history. Oh, amazing. You can go back to history. We can go back to Germany, 1920s, early 1920s. Absolute horror. You see, the Versailles Treaty against Germany was so expensive that Germans could not pay it. And it was in marks. They couldn't pay it. It can't be done. Didn't have the resources and the abilities. But all the allies stood back and said, you're going to pay it or else, pay it or else, pay it or else. So Germany just started printing money. And the value went down so far that I remember stamps. I have a stamp collection. I remember stamps that used to be one mark now being a billion marks. I remember stories, I didn't see this, of people wheeling a wheelbarrow down. The thieves came in and tossed all the money out and stole his wheelbarrow. Guys, inflation is terrible. And we're looking for it, and it's caused by creating money. So all these trillions of dollars that these guys have done, what have we gone from 23 to 28 or 22 and 28 trillion dollars in a year on the deficit? Oh,
yes.
No.
Even I think a tad more than that, but yes.
We haven't even considered the banking multiplier of that money that was created.
Correct. Thank you.
It's worse than you'll ever think of. You think it's $6 trillion. Oh, that's terrible, but it is. But the banks will double, triple, quadruple, 10 times that by the time they've moved the money through their system.
And I mentioned earlier Cliff High, and he's a popular internet analyst, or he's a popular analyst, but he was saying something very much similar to what you're saying about, you know, the creation of money. And to the extent where this is going to all come crashing down, but something about the intent to push toward a digital currency, like a great reset, whether or not that happens, not sure. But also, I'm looking at the Epoch Times here. They did a huge expose about the Communist Chinese Party, about China really overtaking, becoming the world's reserve currency. Because of what the United States is doing. So any part of that is up. I mean, take any part of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The reserve currency. That's absolutely crucial. You know, reserve currency means that all trades are made in the dollar. We've been the reserve currency since 1944, the Bretton Woods Conference. Okay. That established the United States dollar as the reserve currency, the trading currency of the world. Well, let me tell you the effect of that. If our dollar inflates double, every country in the world that has been using our dollar as reserve loses a half of its value. Oh, think on that for a moment. Now, all these countries are looking around and they're saying, hold the phone, look what the United States is doing with money. If they continue it, that's going to destroy our economy as well. Let's get out of this. Let's use something else as our reserve currency. To heck with Bretton Woods. We'll use something else. And each country can make its own choice. It's not required. They can make, each one can. And as more and more lose confidence in our economic stature, more and more will take their money away from ours, which will depress our money even more. Oh, guys, we're walking a tightrope and everybody says, oh, it's fat, dumb, and happy. I just got $1,200 in my checkbook. Yay, I got $1,200. Well, you're going to lose way more than that in the future. And I don't know how far that future is.
I don't either, but everyone is pointing to mid to late summer as some sort of time of reckoning. I don't know. I'm not an economist. I don't have a crystal ball, but.
Let me mention something about what you just said. Just a thought.
All right.
When people who other people have confidence in begin to say something will happen in December or January or March or April or June, by Jove, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. People do the things that will cause that to come to pass.
That's a true statement, yes.
So all we got to do is wait for these. If they say that, you know, this is what's going to happen. In a presentation, oh, this has been several years ago, I was talking about when will the crash is coming. And one of the people in his hand seriously raised his hand. He didn't write anything. Raised his hand and said, well, Richard, when will it happen? And I looked at him with all the gravity I could muster. Tomorrow morning.
Okay. Okay.
Because I don't know when it's going to happen. That's a stupid question. But he was intent. So I just told him an answer. Tomorrow morning, that's all going to occur. Get ready for it. Well, if I had had the credibility some of these other guys said, and the same question came, and I said, it will happen in September, there's a good chance that people will cause it to happen in September.
And again, self-fulfilling prophecy, and I have to admit, I've followed that, you know, I understand that, and I agree with that. If you have enough people saying this is going to happen at this time, you do get into that self-fulfilling prophecy. So I appreciate that. Yeah, we don't know, but we know that this is not sustainable. This is not tenable the way it's going right now.
No, it's not tenable, and it's been caused. It has been caused by our local, state, and federal governments. It's been caused by government because they insisted that we go home and not go to work. They insisted. They destroyed crops all over the United States. They dumped milk that was of value. They crushed eggs. They killed chickens. They killed swine. They killed cattle. What's our government going around doing that kind of stuff for? Our government has caused the problem. You can put the cause in caps. Underline it in red. Blink it back and forth in fluorescent bulbs across the street. The government has caused the problem. Now they are pretending to do a fix by sending money to you. And that makes the problem worse because every dime you get is in a check or is in a deposit in your account. And every time that goes to a bank, the bank says, oh, I've got more assets. I can do that 9 times. So every $10 that goes into a bank from your 15 or 1400 or 28 or whatever you got, every one of those dollars, the bank will turn into 9 times more just because of their operation.
Right.
Now think of what this is saying, guys. I've been talking about banking for 5 years. I know how to fix the problem if you just do it. But nobody will. Okay, nobody wants it fixed. Nobody wants to even try to fix it. They just look out and say, oh, woe is me. Oh, I'm going to
kill. If no one wants to fix it.
And they'll gather around the potbelly stove and moan and piss and carry on. Why don't you do something?
Well, let me ask a different question. If no one wants to fix it, fine. But what can people do and what should people do to protect themselves from the eventuality of this collapse? And you answered this before. I know you did. But we've got new listeners. So, I mean, should we take all the money out of the bank and invest in precious metals? Should we put it in their mattress?
If you took all your money out of the bank, you'd do nothing but destroy the economy.
I know.
Yeah, that's all that happened. See, banks depend on the deposits to operate. If a bank doesn't have depositors, if they all close their accounts, the bank fails. Done.
Yep.
It's over. That bank fails.
Yep.
So if everybody followed the pattern that was just suggested here, we all take our money out of the banks, every bank would fail. Now what? Credit cards worth anything?
Nope.
Cash worth anything?
Nope.
I'm not saying they should, that's causing on debt. I'm saying that banks depend on deposits to keep their bank open. I'm going to refer to I like to refer to movies because they're out there, guys. We've been taught these things in fun movies. We just don't listen.
Oh, It's a Wonderful Life.
George Bailey. The crash of 32 when the bank holiday occurred.
Yep.
1 week holiday, remember?
Yep.
George Bailey raced in there with his $2,000 wedding honeymoon and said, guys, don't close your accounts. Let me loan you some money. And he loaned the money and they didn't close their accounts and his savings and loans survived. The bank itself, the main bank in town in Pottersville, wasn't Pottersville, whatever the city's in, the main bank in town went to Potter for help and Potter bailed him out. And now he owned the bank.
Yep.
Cause he was the depositor. He owned the bank. But nobody owned the savings and loan because George Bailey kept the people from closing their accounts and loaned them the money.
Right.
And their accounts were still open. So here's something to learn from that. You can put this down and you can write it. You can put it in big letters, small letters. You can do that fluorescent bulb if you want. Whatever it was, get people's attention and your own. No honest bank will ever fail unless the depositors cause it. These people that are running down to save their money are destroying their money. Everybody running in the bag, got to get your money out of there or else you'll lose it, are destroying the money they're trying to save.
And thank you for saying that, because that's kind of like, well, I got mine, too bad for you. You know, I got mine out of there. But at the end of the day,
yes. At the end of the day, his isn't worth anything either.
That's right. That's right.
They've all just left it alone and said, oh, well, it's okay. The bank will survive and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But mob mentality said, get your money quick. Get it, get it, get it, get it, get it. Well, then they instituted the FDIC to save us, right? Oh, that's a bunch of garbage. Have you ever heard of a placebo that they give people that doesn't have any effect so they can see what the mind might do? Well, that's what it is. It's just something that's thrown in the mix to get you, the banking customer, you, the citizen of the United States, to say, oh, the government is behind the money. It will be all right. The FDIC will save us. And that's a bunch of garbage. The FDI won't save anybody. The FDIC's purpose is to go into banks and make sure they're obeying the laws of the Federal Reserve. That's their only purpose. Oh, they pay them money. The banks pay them money every month based on their deposits. You know, a little bit. Get that pencil and picture up there. Just a little bit, not much. And they have enough to probably save about, two banks. But how many banks are there? And how big are the banks? Oh, huge. So what happens, you see, is the Federal Reserve will step in to help the FDIC save the banks. And how will they do it? They'll print more money so the bank can still pay out money. So what that means is every person in the country took their money out of the bank, the FDIC would save the bank by putting money in so there wouldn't be any question. They could take the money and go in and still save the bank. They'd be feeding in the background. So if everybody took all of their money out, the FDIC will have doubled the money supply.
Right.
Doubled it.
Right.
And that's what the FDIC's boon for you is, a double of the money supply, which will not just double inflation, because the banks get a hold of the money, you see, and the banks are part of the FDIC, and they'll get a hold of the money and they'll turn it over and turn it over and turn it over 9 times per dollar. That's what the system does. And we're happy with it. Aren't we happy with it?
It's like
taking a rowboat that's full of holes and saying, bail faster.
Exactly. And that was my kind of my question. We're okay with it, but is it really okay? It's not really okay.
And it's because people do not know economics and they do not know banking, both of which I cover in my book so people can know it if they would just get the book and read it.
Right.
Oh.
So what do we, okay, let me just kind of cut to the chase here and ask you, so my $250,000 is FDIC covered. Oh, wait, never mind. We covered that. So what's the best thing for you and I to do? For the listeners, the viewers, the people are saying, man, if this is going to crash, how do I protect what I've got?
Here is the solution, okay? And that's a good thing for us to put a solution out here today.
I'd love that solution, yes.
That is a solution. Here is the solution. Now, it's not new to me. I've been teaching this solution for 5 years. I've been teaching it on these, on the broadcasts here over the country for 3 years.
Yes, you have.
And what have I been teaching? Public citizens banks.
Yep.
Authorized by the state under the 10th Amendment. That will do it, because the profits from those banks will stay in the state. And the, those profits will then begin to avoid taxes, and your money will be safe through your own state. That will do it. And you know another thing that will do it? You gotta have a legislature that cares about this silly little book right here. Yep. I don't understand. This silly little book. You gotta have a legislature that cares about this silly little book right here. I'm gonna try it again to get it over here so people can see it. There. Oh, there it is. This silly little book. Okay? That book is what's going to save us, but we don't care about it. We're just throwing away because we don't care. We don't know anything about it. It don't matter. It'll be all right. Everything will happen. It'll all go back to normal. No, it won't. You know, I think, just my own thought here, I think that there are thousands, not one or two, but thousands of people in the audience listening today, listening to my podcast. More of the podcasts are those who have actually bought the book, but there are thousands of people who have not bought the book because they didn't get around to it. Oh, I was going to do that, but it just didn't. I hear those words almost every day from someone who calls me on the phone and says, well, you know, I've been wanting to do this, but just haven't got it done.
Yeah.
I think there are thousands and thousands who've just been postponing getting, oh yeah, that's not expensive. And I could do that. I could do that easy, but oh well, I'll wait till next week. Oh, I just can't get to it. Oh, you know, there are people who passed out round to it so they could get busy. Zig Ziglar passed out round to it. Little round, get my finger up there. Little round to it. Okay. He passed them out. Everybody got a round to it.
Yeah. So then, I saw Zig Ziglar in New York City at the Waldorf Astoria back in 1980, I think it was, and I have one of those. It's
one of those round to it.
Yeah, I do.
Yes, I have a couple of them. Yes.
Anyway, I remember him doing that.
He said during the presentation, "Now you've got your round to it. Get busy." those were his words.
Yep.
Those were his words. With the same amount of gusto, I just said that too.
Wow.
I'm saying it again. Do you really care about our Constitution? You can't care about something you know nothing about. You'll be surprised at the telephone calls I get and the things that come up. We're going to talk about a couple of those a little later on. We're in 28 minutes, first half. So the second half, we'll talk about something else, I think. Would be nice.
Your call, Doctor.
Yeah,
your call.
But here's what happens. I got a call this morning from Australia, mind you. Nice young lady on the phone. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to explain what she said as best I can. She said that since we're at war, or there's a possibility of war, the Constitution allows capital punishment. And since, how can we make sure that everybody knows that during the war, the Constitution allows capital punishment? Because we've got to get something done here. Please discuss that for me. I've been listening to the Doug Hagman Show. Discuss it. What? It's relevant. Okay, yes, it's relevant. Constitution says nothing whatsoever about capital punishment. Not one word. Not for it, not against it. Not one word. But what it does say is the right of the people will not be subjected to cruel and unusual punishment. It does say that. The people have a right to not be exposed to cruel or unusual punishment in the Bill of Rights. Now we know what it says. What has happened over time? The Supreme Court has decided to define what is a cruel and unusual punishment. Using today's society, let's go back to 1787. What was cruel and unusual punishment then? They hung people all the time for violations. They hung people just because they thought they were witches. Didn't consider that cruel and unusual at all. What was cruel and unusual? They took people, tied their arms to varying levers, and pulled their arms off them. Tied their legs and arms and pulled their legs and arms off them while they were there alive, suffering. Have is anybody doing that, except criminals, is anybody doing any of that today to anybody in the country, any government, anybody? No. We would never even consider that. Okay, guys, that's what it meant. It meant don't do this. They had a tool. It was a round hook, sharp. And they laid this guy or gal or whoever out on the table, stripped off their clothes, and yanked that down and pulled out their guts. They're alive. That's cruel and unusual punishment, not capital punishment.
All right, let me ask you this, if I may. So we have the Constitution. We had the Bill of Rights ratified in 1791. Now, this is what I learned, folks, from Saving the Constitution, Richard Proctor, Provost Institute. All right? So correct me if I'm wrong here, what you're talking about. And then I'll shut up and let you go. So the Bill of Rights, the 10 constitutional amendments, again, ratified in 1791, it included a long list of personal rights against what you're talking about, against federal abuse, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so among them was the Fifth Amendment's prohibition on the federal government's denying a person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law.
Right.
Okay, now let me jump ahead, and if I'm going too far, let me know. But the 14th Amendment that was adopted in 1868 contained a shorter, much shorter list of rights that protected against state abuse, including the rule that states may not deprive any person of life, liberty, property without due process of law. The phrase I'm kind of focusing on is without due process of law.
Yes.
Does that kind of, here's why I bring this up. What you're talking about, it seems as if we've replaced constitutional rights, liberties, and limitations with federal, processes, not constitutional works, but, for example, due process of law. The meaning was plain when it was established. The government, they can't make up stuff as they go along, make the rules up as they go along. Is this what you're talking about in a sense?
A good portion of it, but not completely.
Okay,
yes.
Continue. Go ahead.
Well, let's just talk about due process of law. What is due process of law? What it really is today. What it really is means that the rich people don't get punished and the poor people do. That's due process of law. Do you see Clintons being punished for their activities? No, you don't. Well, it's money. Okay, money and power. Do you see Pelosi being punished for her traitorous activities? No, it's money and law. If I did the same things they did, they'd throw me in jail. Yeah. So we do not have due process of law anymore. That's the due process side. How did that come about? Well, it comes about with a group of 9 judges today wearing black robes sitting in Washington, D.C., calling them the arbitrators of justice. Blah, 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 blah. With absolutely no authority whatsoever, they make things up so that they can do whatever they want to do. They took this concept of cruel and unusual punishment. And they decided that if you did something to a person that was of a certain age, juveniles, because they mangled and killed people with axes, they were juveniles. Therefore, we cannot have cruel and unusual punishment to this young man who killed these people with axes. So they're exempt from capital punishment because they're young, and that's why they did it. The Supreme Court. We had another case. This is in Salt Lake City. This was really terrible a long time ago, but it doesn't matter when it was. This guy, criminal, went into a place and corralled all the people who were employed or customers, whatever, in that location, and poured acid down their ears and in their mouth. They died. When he got to court, they wanted capital punishment. Oh, no, we can't do that. That's cruel and unusual. What happened to those people? Was that normal? What do you mean cruel and unusual? Don't you think, well, we don't want to say this, but an eye for an eye would really have worked better. Give him out, strap him down, and pour acid down his ears. But that's not what we do, and I don't recommend it. What I do recommend is get our head out of the sand and understand that you cannot, again, the same laws, human nature, imputable, you can't do anything about it. If you tell criminals they will not be punished for doing what they're doing, they will do it. And by, how do you tell them they're not going to be punished? By taking away punishment, i.e. capital punishment. So since capital punishment is gone, it becomes longer jail terms. And then, but you, everything will have to go down another level. Because you can't, oh no, we could not shoot this guy, execute him, hang him, or electrocute. We could not do that. That'd be cruel, that poor fellow. Oh, oh, oh. But nobody cares about the victim. All the young ladies that have been raped and tortured and beaten and killed. And we won't do anything to the criminal because that would be cruel and unusual. That's because the Supreme Court has decided that's cruel and unusual.
If I can ask you, just slip in a question here. It's more than the Supreme Court, in my view. It's, you look at the leftist, or the district attorneys. There were 39 district attorneys, I think 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, that were installed, that were George Soros DAs, okay, funded and propped up by Soros or his group, that were soft on punishment, period. We're seeing people, criminals being let out of prison, killers and rapists in California.
Yes, we are.
We're seeing.
That's right. So it's not just the Supreme Court, is it?
No.
It's the environment of which we have arrived. But the reason we've arrived at that government is because the justice system got set aside by the Supreme Court. They were the instigators back at the beginning points. Because none of this stuff happened overnight. It took long years to occur, to get to the point we're at. But now, over the last year and a half, we've been doing it with alacrity. We've been changing things. They got all those people out of prisons so they'd have room to put the people in that weren't wearing masks or wouldn't close their businesses. They threw them in jail. They let the rapists and the criminals all out. The rioters in all over the West, oh, Seattle, Oregon, are exonerated. Oh, that's okay. There's exonerated. But one guy in Washington except on January the 6th is being thrown in prison and penalized because he was in Washington. Our justice system is gone. But that's because we've been allowing it to be gone for so many years. Our contract system. Oh, we chuckle about the fine print in a contract. Guys, the fine print in any contract is a way of saying we can get away with whatever we want no matter what you sign. That's what that means. What kind of a deal is that? We used to be able to do things on a handshake. I'll pay you. Handshake. And you did. And everybody knew it. Today, I'll pay you with a handshake with the other hand behind his back crossing his fingers. I ain't going to pay you no matter what you say. But he says that. That's what we've degenerated into. And we've degenerated into it because our law system lessened and lessened and lessened and become less and less just. And as it became less and less just, so did the people. Guys, it's human nature. It's not going to change. It's always been that way. It always will be. Let's just take the 10 tribes, Mount Sinai and Moses. Just as an example. He's up in the mountain doing whatever he did when he was up in the mountain for 40 days. Do you think that group that rebelled downtown, down in the valley, do you think they did it in 1 minute? He was up there for 40 days. Did you think it was the last three that kind of stuff happened? No. the first day somebody said something, and the second somebody else did, and somebody else did. And slowly it built momentum until it got to what you saw at the end of Ten Commandments, when the people are really rioting sexually and maliciously and criminally. But it didn't happen on the first day. It happened on the 40th or the 35th. You see what I'm talking about?
There's a process.
This isn't happening today because of today. This is happening because of our last century of complete disregard for the rule of law and honesty and integrity. We won't even let schools talk about moral things. Right or wrong doesn't exist in a school anymore. If you feel it's all right, then it is. No, that's not true. But that's what we're teaching, and that's what our children are growing up with. And we took God and morality out of school in the 1960s. It was 72 and we'd killed babies, and that was okay. But it was not okay in 1950. Why was it okay in 72? What changed? Our culture changed.
Yep.
Here the kids, all morality was taken out of school. Where do children spend a good portion of their winter months and spring and autumn months? They spend them in a school class.
Mm-hmm.
And in that school class, they're being taught there's no right or wrong. Whatever you want to do is okay. And they got these computer games. Bang, 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 bang. So you're learning how to bang, 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 not paying any attention to the results. When people get in the way, they go bang, bang, bang anyway. We are losing ourselves because parents all went to work in the 1960s so they could have more stuff. And that was an economic factor. Let me explain the economics behind that, okay?
All right.
1950s, my mom and every lady in the neighborhood was at home.
Mine too.
And when we did stuff, one of the ladies would see us and say, ha ha, ha ha, and we'd all get in trouble. Now that's appropriate. And if we did stuff wrong in class, the teacher would complain to the parents. The parents would punish the kid, not the teacher. That's how it was in the 50s. But then people began to want more things that were nice to have.
Stop right there. Was that the only reason, or was there an economic need for two incomes? Not an economic want, but need.
Not at the beginning, Doug.
Okay, I'm asking.
The very beginning.
Okay.
Let's back up to the beginning. I'm talking about the early, before the so-called need arose. You see, folks, this is what the economic principles are. You know, I'm trying to teach this. I'm trying to help you know it. I got a book out that helps you know these kinds of things, but not in this complete, because this is very detailed. You can't do all of this in one book. But anyway, this is what happens. I'm going to use a very simple thing that we all of the 1950s experienced that is not difficult to visualize. Gasoline was done at a service station. These guys ran out to fill your car and do all this kind of stuff. Well, a gas station decided that they would sell gas 2 cents cheaper. And when it was already only 30, 2 cents is quite a bit. If it's $4, 2 cents doesn't matter. But back in this time frame, 2 cents mattered. Gas cost 32 cents a gallon to 25, depending on the gas wars, which don't happen today that did then. Now, these people said, I'm a little lazy. I don't want to go out and fill the car every time somebody comes in. I'm tired of it. And I don't want to hire all these people to do it. So I tell you what I'll do. Out of the goodness of my heart, I will reduce the price of gasoline for all of those who will go to the self-service pump. Okay? Now, if I went to the self-service pump, I knew that I was going to get 2 cents less. And if I went to the full-service pump, I knew I would have to pay 2 cents more. Now, right in the beginning of that, I didn't realize that that's what was going on. So here I was going into it. I saw a pump that was 2 cents less than the others. And so I used it.
Yep.
Or I saw a pump that was 2 cents less than the others, but I used the full service pump and pumped it myself.
Wait.
Because I saw the other. Either of those are okay. Either one.
Okay. All right.
What is happening? Oh, in that particular case, I complained to the service station manager. He said, tough luck. I complained to the I complained to the owner of the gasoline that he was being serviced. I got my money back. Nonetheless, okay, not many people do that. Nonetheless, all of us were being conditioned. If we just service a self-service pump, we'd get a rebate. So more and more of us began to take the rebate and take the self-service pump. Slowly, the self-service pump became more and more important. And the service part of a service station became less and less important. Slowly, it got to the point where nobody ever got full service. Everybody had to pump their own gas no matter what. That's a case of a change in culture.
Yep.
We changed from a culture where we accepted service and expected service. We went to a culture where we expected no service, and we got no service, and we paid a little less for gas. But there was no pump for full service, so we paid all the same anyway. That's the same thing that happened in the home. Mother and dad were purchasing things that they thought the family would like for Christmas and birthdays and things. And they were nice things. And I'm not being critical of mother and dad for doing that, okay? They wanted to do nice things for their kids. One day, mother sat at the table with dad and said, look, if I just go to work part-time, just a little bit, I can make enough money and we can get that present for Johnny. And he'd like that. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be a good thing? Yes, he said. So she did. And remember, this was after World War II, and lots of women were working to keep the war going. Men went to fight, girls, women went out and built stuff so they could. Okay, but that's gone now. Into the 50s, that's gone. But now it's beginning to itch its way back, not during wartime, just during want time. I want this or that. And the women discover that if they worked a lot of hours, they could have more to spend. Now, do you see what's happening here? The velocity of money is going to change. Now, there won't necessarily be any more money available, but the velocity of money is going to change, which will affect the price. Remember, MV equals PT, V is a part of it, velocity. That will affect the price. As more and more people want things, the prices will go up just a little bit, which will require a little bit more work to have those same items. And eventually we get now to where I'm ending this thing, you gotta see that pattern. That pattern just continues and gets more and more and more until the wife has to work to support the needs, not the wants. Had none of them gone after the wants back in the early 50s and stayed home with the kids, well, our country would be entirely different. Entirely different. But wants are a powerful item. I've had arguments with college-age kids just whether they had a need or a want for a cell phone.
Man. Oh, yeah. Oh, how true is that even, I mean, right this moment? And that,
yes.
You know, I got to tell you this. And then, folks, hopefully you practice this yourself. Any purchase my wife and I make outside of groceries, we ask each other, and I mean verbally ask each other, do we need this or are we just, is this just a want? And if it's just a want, we give it 3 days and reassess the finances. But if it's a need, it's clearly identifiable as such. But go ahead, sir.
Yep, that's precisely correct. Needs and wants are a big deal.
Yep.
We have changed our needs and wants significantly because we have come to expect those things. For example, if tomorrow the government made a law, oh, the government makes laws, oh, do they ever, you cannot have a cell phone. You must use a landline. How many people the day after tomorrow couldn't communicate with anybody?
Tossing a rotary phone.
I grew up a little bit further back than most anybody else is listening here. Grew up in, you know, I'm 105. So, you know, I'm a little longer ago than when I grew up. We had one, can you see the number? One black phone hooked with a short cord to the wall.
Yep.
And when that phone in the middle of the house rang, if you were upstairs, you ran downstairs. Yep. It rang many times. And if you were in the kitchen, you ran to them. Everybody would, got to get there and get it. And not only that, there were four parties. That's four. See the numbers? Four different people on the different families on the same number.
Glendale 6.
Party line. Party line.
That's right. Yep.
And you couldn't call the people on your party line because when you call them, the line was busy. So you had another code you could use, beep, 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 that would avoid that, and you could call someone on your party line. I lived with a two-party line for years.
Yep.
Black phone in the middle of the house and a two-party line. Now, Richard has a little bit of different inclination than most people. I didn't like to sit upstairs in the front room talking on the telephone, and we did have two phones on the same line, one downstairs and one upstairs. We had two jacks, one downstairs, one upstairs. My room was downstairs. I went down to the jack where the phone was, took that line out and cut it. And I put a 50-foot line in there with it. Okay? Worked perfect. Nobody knew that. My dad didn't know I did that. My mom didn't know I cut it. Put a new line in. And I laid in bed, wandered around, whatever I wanted. With the phone, I could talk on the phone and not be tied to that desk. I like that. So that's what I did.
Good times, okay, by the way.
That's how I got around the one phone in the middle of the room that I had to run over to answer. I had it next to my bed, 50-foot line. I could go anywhere I wanted in the basement. Now, it wasn't really 50 feet. I was probably only 10 or 15, but it served the purpose, okay? It served the purpose of allowing me to lay in bed while I was talking on the phone.
Right.
See? Now, that's how I treat things. I look at the problem and fix it. Now, right now, I'm looking at the problem of food in grocery stores.
All right.
There's a terrible problem right now, food in grocery stores.
Yes, there is. And people aren't, okay,
paying attention.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so this is what, you remember, I'm the guy innovative. I do stuff. I don't ask. I just pay attention, look and see what I think's going to happen, and act on it. January of last year, when I began to hear about COVID, let me think, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. It's going to get them, and that's going to happen. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. But the shelves are going to be empty. So in January, I started buying food, and I put it in my house. Nobody complained. Nobody even thought about it. Nobody was asking. Nobody was worried about it in January. In March, nobody could get anything, but I had all I needed because I just thought about it and looked a little ahead. Well, I'm doing that right now with food, okay, gardening food. Now, I've had a gardening a lot of times, but it's been okay. In a small garden, I took care of what we needed in vegetables and stuff like that for a whole summer. In a big garden, we put stuff up, and we had fresh peas from the garden clear into January. Learned how to do those things. But it wasn't necessary. Today, I see it's necessary. We must grow food. But I'm not agile like I used to do, and I don't go out and plow 40 acres, okay? I didn't then either, but you got the idea. I learned about a simple system of growing food in bags in pools. And I'm perfecting that. Others are perfecting it better than me, and I'm learning from them, okay? The idea works like this. You put a bag together and you put proper soil together. You make your own soil, by the way. You make it with vermiculite, which is an aerator, and peat moss, which gives you some body, and compost, which gives it some food. Okay? And you're going to add a few fertilizers every now and again that you can get help and a few things to feed the plants. But that's the basic thing you do. You fill a bag. The bag's about, I don't know, 12 inches around, about 12 inches deep, and it's porous. So you fill the pool with water, you put the bag in the water. Fill the bag with water one time, saturate it, and that creates an osmosis, which pulls the water out of the pool up into the bag. Plant your seeds, plant your plants in the bag. One pool, my pools each hold 8 bags. Okay, so I can put 8 bags around. How much can I grow in 8 bags? Oh, I can grow a whole row of peas, almost a whole row in a bag. 20 plants, 20, 30 plants in one bag. What else is there? I'm sitting on a bucket or a chair and planting. I'm sitting on a bucket or a chair and weeding soft soil. I'm sitting on a bucket or a chair and harvesting. Ease of use. There's a bag. How big is the pool? 4 feet in diameter. How many pools can you do? As many as you've got room to walk around. So a small yard can produce food. This won't work in the inside, but it would work on a patio. You get the idea? Problems are coming. Figure out solutions. Don't just say, oh, woe is me. What can I do? Don't say that. Actually, do something to avoid the coming problem. And if you can't see the coming problem, you've got your head in the sand. You think last year's food problem was bad. Wait until the next one comes along, because the farmers aren't growing what they used to grow. Meat packing plants have shut down. All kinds of things have stopped. You can't eat it if it's not grown or produced. Another thing you need to do is learn how to store the food you grow.
Yes.
You got to learn how to store it for a period of time. But those are important things you need to know. Now, what am I doing? I'm putting in a second freezer so I can freeze more vegetables so they'll last into the winter, maybe even till next spring. That's the plan. But what if I lose electricity? Oh, dear me. I'm going to put in a system that will keep the freezers working and the refrigerator working. You see, plan for these things. Don't just sit back and say, woe is me. It's coming. I don't know what I'm going to do. Plan.
Yeah.
Do a little speculating. What could happen? Prepare yourself. Last year when everybody was fighting for food, I didn't care. I went and got some sometimes, but I didn't care. I had everything I needed. Some months I didn't go to the grocery store at all. And we didn't do without either at all. Just because I planned ahead. Even now.
Yep.
Now, what are we talking now? 18 months from then? We still only go to the grocery store a couple of days a week. Get a few vegetables, a little bit of milk, eggs, stuff like that. Everything else is in our house.
And that's what we need to be, as everyone listening to this show and watching this show, because, and I know this sounds trite, okay, but look, I care. I care what happened. I can't afford to lose viewers and listeners, all right? You know, because it's double digits, right? but I'm serious. We need to take stock and do what you're, I mean, that pool thing, I got to learn more about that.
Oh, it's really nice. It's really fine. You just have to do it right. I did it wrong the first time, had to learn from somebody else how to fix it. I'm fixing it. Okay.
Huh.
Everybody doesn't know everything, but somebody always knows something that you don't know. So you talk with them about it. Bingo, they know better than you. And you do that.
Right. Right.
Cause it's better. Oh yes, guys. It can be done. Now, I want to make one statement and a different statement. We're close to the end. I want to make a statement. You asked me to listen to a broadcast today about how to get the President Trump back in office and stop this bitching thing about the illegal election in November 3rd. Okay?
Right.
His discussion is a little bit accurate, mostly inaccurate.
Okay.
Okay, the reason it's inaccurate is because he doesn't treat the Electoral College as it's supposed to be treated. We don't have time to talk about it. My next podcast, number 7, will be on the selection of the president in an orderly, proper, constitutional way.
All right.
Which would have been everything that's been. That'll be my podcast next week, okay?
I love that. And folks, Saving the Constitution on Rumble. Go to provostinstitute.com. It's linked from there, but there it is on your screen right there. An hour broadcast a week. It's very, very informative. And the question that I asked, somebody had sent me a link to anyway, it's a video. And the issue was, well, what happens if, you know, fraud is discovered and all of a sudden the entire United States says, hey, wait a second. Our elections were hijacked and Biden didn't win, President Trump won. Is there a method? Is there a mechanism, constitutional mechanism? And I believe that the gentleman cited the 14th Amendment or something like that. Anyway. Or 12th
Amendment. Yeah, and he misused it.
Yeah.
Should have done the Article 2 of the Constitution.
All right. So, yeah. So watch for that on this next podcast, Saving the Constitution, folks. Thank you, and Richard. Go ahead.
You find it at provostinstitute.com. Nobody can find it on Rumble. Nobody can.
Okay.
Provostinstitute.com. It's there.
And that's the place to go for everything. Provostinstitute.com, Saving the Constitution. And you know what, folks? Bathroom Economics. You're going to love that book. Buy it, okay? Richard, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good night. All right, folks, that'll do it. Out of time. Over time. Thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in. May God bless each and every one of you. Until tomorrow. Tomorrow, Steve Quayle. And that tomorrow will be our last broadcast, normal broadcast of the week. Steve Quayle, have a good night.